Well, friends, good evening. Welcome again. We've spent the last two Sundays and also this morning having a dip into the wisdom of Ecclesiastes, haven't we? We haven't given it so much of a thorough goings over. That's probably best done as a group Bible study. But hopefully we've given enough of a flavour to intrigue you and to equip you for reading the book yourself. We've seen that the book is written by a man who calls himself the teacher, in Hebrew, Kohelet, probably best translated as the seminar leader or even the gatherer. And throughout the book, he has been helping us ask the right questions in our search for meaning, giving us two clashing perspectives on life. First, he's given us what we can call the Greek perspective. All there is what we see under the sun. And so we find meaning through our own experiences, trying things out, making the best of the material world we live in. But if that's all there is, then everything in the book's famous tagline is meaningless. That's what we just read, verse 8 of chapter 12. That is this word, Hevel. It is a breath, it is a mist, it is transitory, because it is enigmatic, it's beyond understanding. That's the dominant perspective of the book. But thrown up against that view, the teacher has peppered his thoughts with what we can call the Hebrew perspective. We are not to simply look at all that is under the sun, but we are to look at the one who is over the sun, God the creator. Meaning comes not from our own experience, but from recognizing that God is God. He knows and we don't. And so the real thrust of this book's teaching is not so much Greek perspective wrong, Hebrew perspective right, but rather more subtly that meaning through experience is useful, but it has its limits. And we can only live properly in a confusing, enigmatic, uncertain world with reference to our Creator. Now, doing that, it doesn't make the world less enigmatic, but it does give us a better grip on reality. It doesn't remove from existence terrorist attacks and religious tensions and modern slavery and mosquito-borne viruses and doping scandals, but it does give us the proper perspective on them. So this evening, as we look at the last two chapters of Ecclesiastes, written as tantalizing, thought-provoking poetry, I wonder if you noticed that as Andy read it, for many their favorite verses in the Old Testament, we're going to hear the teacher's instructions as to how to live in the tension and the confusion of an uncertain world. For verse 5 and 6 of chapter 11, you cannot understand the work of God. You do not know which will succeed, whether this or that. So in that kind of uncertainty, how do we live? How should we live? The teacher's answers might surprise us a bit. First, to live in an uncertain world, be bold. Be bold. Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there will it lie. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. The fact that human beings, you and I, cannot control the future is being used as an argument, not for hiding away and living cautiously, But it's being used as an argument for taking a risk, for being bold. Clouds full of water and a falling tree paint the picture of both the inevitability and the randomness of bad things happening in life. Just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're immune from bad things. Take the volatility of world stock markets in recent weeks. The Brexit vote caused a sudden sharp fall globally, but surprisingly, some indices have now risen to 52-week highs. No one can predict the long-term impact of the UK leaving the EU because we live in an uncertain world. Whether it will, 20 years from now, be good or be bad for the UK and for the world economy. Events are both inevitable and random. But moreover, verse 5, human knowledge is limited compared to God. We think we know everything, but actually we're ignorant of so much. Yes, today we have ultrasound scans of fetuses in the womb. We can talk about the biology of birth, but we do not really know how a child is formed, their body, their soul, their spirit. Only the maker of all things knows. Times are uncertain. Bad things happen inevitably and randomly. Our knowledge is limited. But while stock markets react to uncertainty negatively, we are told in true Ecclesiastes style to seize the day, to be bold, to react positively. Because if there are risks in everything, Ecclesiastes says it's better to try and fail than to never try at all. It's better to fail in launching out than in hugging one's resources to oneself. It's thought that verse 1 has maritime trade in mind. Cast your bread upon the waters. And if verse 2 is referring to the same, split your bread between 7 or even 8 boats. Diversify your trade, because it may reap a reward. What's the worst that can happen? You get back soggy bread? What's the best that can happen? You make a profit, and in weeks and in months to come, your investment has grown. I recognise that diversification is usually to decrease risk rather than increase it. But this is saying being invested in the first place is far better than just keeping your money in your pocket doing nothing. And of course that is true of many things in life. That's not just about ISA investments. Because perhaps God is reminding some of us here, perhaps those more cautious by nature, that the biggest risk there is in life is not taking any. So in your walk with God, be bold. Take a chance. Make that bold decision in your friendship with another. Strike up a conversation with your work colleague about your faith. Throw yourself in the deep end, serving in that area at church. We do not know the future, but that's a reason to take a risk rather than to play it safe. So be bold. But number 2, to live in an uncertain world, rejoice. Rejoice. Verse 7. Light is sweet and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. But let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything to come is meaningless. Be happy, young man, while you are young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. But know that for all these, God will bring you to judgment. So then, banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigour are meaningless. If we are to be bold in an uncertain world, we are also to be joyful. It's just a punch, but maybe there are some people here this evening who just really need to hear that. Be joyful. Rejoice. Learn to enjoy your life. What does that mean? You may think, well, there's no reason, is there, to tell a young man or a young woman to enjoy their lives or follow the ways of their heart. But this is not an instruction to live a life of hedonism and then to spend the rest of your life repenting and regretting it. The teacher's saying, enjoy God's gifts and the adventures and the discoveries of youth, but recognize the limits, knowing where the boundaries of life are. Yes, live life to the full, live life to the max, but that's not saying live life selfishly or thoughtlessly or godlessly or destructively. Those things are outside of joy, our own and those of others. And the reason we're reminded of this here in Ecclesiastes is because, well, we're just not very good at knowing the limits, are we? We think, don't we, that life is somehow consistent and that life is reliable. It's not. It is not. Life is not all sewn up. Life is fundamentally unreliable. We cannot control everything, nor should we try. We cannot understand everything. We cannot turn everything to profit. So it's only as we come to terms with those limits that we can properly take today as a gift from God and enjoy it to his glory. Our work, our play, our achievements, and our enjoyments. That is, enjoy life. Do not live a life of misery or passivity or fatalism or world weariness, but rather recognize what God is giving us now. Joy with proper boundaries. Joy with God at the center. That does not turn us into either hedonists at one extreme or aesthetics at the other. It's a balanced, wise way of living that can enjoy God's gifts without abusing them or without worshipping them. That can, as one person put it, laugh in the party and weep in the funeral. That knows how to be young and learns how to grow old gratefully. In essence, it is living authentically, embracing each aspect of life and living it in the light of God's present blessing and his future judgment. But it is never forgetful of God and the meeting with God that will mark, of course, every human life. The English writer W.H. Auden, he wrote these words about 60 years ago in one of his poems. Thoughts of his own death, like the distant roll of thunder at a picnic. Now the teacher in Ecclesiastes is wanting you to enjoy the picnic and hear the distant thunder of death and judgment. No one likes the person at a picnic who is just so obsessed with the coming rainstorm that they become unsociable. But equally, we are wise, aren't we, to enjoy our sandwiches and cake now, whilst keeping in mind when we're going to depart because of the weather. That's called wise, joyful, genuine living. Preparing you for that meeting with God, which will authenticate your life and give final meaning to your existence. I think I'm right in saying that W.H. Auden himself heard the distant thunder, but he did nothing about it. He did not properly prepare for the final days and the last things. He did not make his peace with God. Of course, if you're here this evening and you are a Christian, we do not know the future any more than anyone else, but we do know God, who holds the future in his hands. We may not have guarantees of success or health. We may not have guarantees of life itself. But we do have the guarantee of his goodness and of his love and of his commitment to us for this world and the world to come. So in an uncertain world, strange as it may sound, rejoice. Rejoice. That's our response to the transitory and the uncertain nature of life. Interestingly, present-day Jews who celebrate Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Booths, remembering God's protection of Israel during 40 years in the wilderness, they have the book of Ecclesiastes as the assigned synagogue scriptural reading during this feast. Why? Because Ecclesiastes and Sukkot are both about living in joy though life is transitory. They're both about celebrating, making the most of life while we're here, knowing we won't be here forever. One popular Jewish writer, Rabbi Harold Kirshner, describes it like this. Sukkot is a celebration of the things that don't last. The little hut which is so vulnerable to wind and rain. The ripe fruits which will spoil if not picked and eaten right away. The friends who may not be with us for as long as we would wish. It is a time to celebrate the fact that we have finally learned what life is about and how to make the most of it. So in an uncertain world, learn how to rejoice, how to make the most. But third, in an uncertain world, remember God. Sounds obvious, but it's actually quite a revolutionary statement in this book of Ecclesiastes. You may have noticed that the teacher is perhaps sparing in his references to the God of Israel in this book. God is there, of course, but he's not always obvious. In the striking phrase of one commentator, Kohelet's God may be detected not so much by sight as by scent and footprint, but he is unquestionably present nonetheless. For so many people then, so many people now, if you do not see God everywhere, you will see him nowhere. And therefore, if you or I do not seek God in every situation, well, we shouldn't be surprised if we do not find God in the situations where we need him. God is there, and he is not silent. But we know that sin has made the world deaf to God's word. Ecclesiastes, through its chapters, actually tells us quite a lot about God, even without mentioning him too much. Scanning through the chapters, Ecclesiastes tells us that God makes everything, the beautiful and the crooked. He makes good times, he makes bad times. He gives people the days of their lives. He gives them their breath, he gives them their work, he gives them their wealth, he gives them their food. He also gives them burdens. He tests people. He will judge them. He takes no pleasure in fools. He calls the past to account. As we heard this morning, God is in heaven and we are on earth. And we cannot know what he has done. But even if God is incomprehensible to the teacher here, we still can worship. We still can obey him. We still can trust him for all the days to come and beyond. So perhaps I can read again the first 8 verses of chapter 12 with its memorable pictures of fading youth, fading status, fading strength in the image of a decaying house. That's what it is. Once great. Don't analyse these verses too much. It's poetry. Just feel them and let them speak to you. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain. When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those looking through the windows grow dim. when the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, when men rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint, when men are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags himself along and desire no longer is stirred. Then man goes to his eternal home and mourners go about the streets. Remember him before the silver cord is severed or the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring or the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. So we have pictures of old age, fading light as the servants and mistresses are not what they once were, trembling, stooping, no one to work, sitting, gazing, growing dim, songs fading, fear, the almond white flower of old age as the once sprightly grasshopper now drags himself. And even sexual desire is no longer stirred. Literally, when the impotency of old age renders aphrodisiacs useless. Then man goes to his eternal home and mourners go about the streets. What then is to be done? Well, there is one answer and one answer only. Remember God. Remember God. Remember your Creator, the eternal God, who does not age, who does not grow weary. Remember him before the silver cord is severed, or the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring, or the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. The idea here is that human life is fragile, isn't it? Human life is vulnerable. As with a golden lamp in a temple suspended on a chain falling to the ground, irreparably damaged, or a clay jug on a rope around a wheel crashing down into a well. Death is as certain as the destruction of the jug, the pitcher, when it falls to the bottom of the well, followed by the wheel itself. Crash! Friends, if that is the nature of life, our best reaction, indeed, our only reaction, is to remember God. Here's what Ian Provon says in his commentary. We are to turn to God in repentance for all our foolish vanity about ourselves and for all our mad schemes for gaining control of his universe and using it for our own selfish ends. We must learn to be content with the life God has given us, rather than pursuing the life that we imagined we might have preferred. And in our contentment, learn to live each moment well and to be generous to others. The long-term view must dominate our thinking and our living and inform all our decision-making. All must be judged in the light of the truth and not in the light of self-serving myths. So in uncertain times, remember God. And that's also the way the book ends, verses 9 to 14, which are the words of a narrator, perhaps the final editor after the teacher, who treasures up this book for future generations of Israel. Verse 9, not only was the teacher wise, but also he imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails, given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. The book of Ecclesiastes has carefully and with years of deep thought made its unique contribution to biblical wisdom. The narrator says the teacher was not interested in merely giving us an evening's entertainment, but he was concerned to give his young listeners a framework for making sense of life. Verse 10, his words were chosen with care. They were meant to be remembered. They were meant to be reflected on. Sometimes, verse 11, they were like sharp goads prodding the conscience. One writer comments here, wisdom must be allowed to do its painful work on our lives. As the goads bite, we must resist the temptation to reach out for the painkiller. And yet the narrator is also saying that those words of wisdom were firm and they were safe, like nails fastening together the structures of a life well lived. And so, verse 12, there's no point in adding to them alternative philosophies that do not recognize the limits of life under the sun and do not recognize the one over the sun, leave us exhausted, leave us not able to make sense of living today. So there's no point in making many books, for we have this one already. Much study wearies the body. Perhaps a good verse for anyone revising for exams. But what we do have is wisdom for the next generation. We have joy with proper boundaries, regulated by the encounter to come with God, our Maker and our Judge. And summarizing the whole book now, we have the command to seize the day, but remember the night, the judgment of your Creator, the God of Abraham, who is the judge of all the earth. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. It is the sum of human existence. It is our destiny. It is the beginning and it is the end of human life. What does that mean? It means if life sometimes seems trivial and human decisions irrelevant, then the judgment of God comes to give immeasurable weight to human life and to all moral choices. Are you looking for a point? Are you looking for purpose in life? Well, this is life's purpose, that we know God, that we love and worship him, that we fear and follow him in this world and in the next. So as we close, this book prompts me to ask each of us, do you know him? Are you following him? Can you face the future in this world with its uncertainties? And can you face the next world with its certain judgment? Of course, we need to go to the New Testament to see fully and finally how we can know God through his Son, the Lord Jesus, given to all who believe, sacrificially on the cross, rising again to bring us back to himself. But at this point in salvation history, at this point in the Bible, we're simply pointed God's way, not told any more. So whilst Ecclesiastes offers no formal or formulaic answer to the problems of life, its uncertainty, its transitory and enigmatic nature, it does give us God. And faced with the unanswerable questions of life, we too can walk on with God. We can say, in the words of C.S. Lewis, and with this I finish, I know now, Lord, why you utter no answer. You are yourself the answer. Before your face, questions die away.